furious. Give him to me. He is mine by right. The Dragon Lord studied me.
Two gifts for one? That's not fair.
I gave your guards a 1 pound gold bar worth at least 17,000.
True. He rubbed his lips, contemplating. Come to hear my speech tomorrow afternoon, and I will give you the thief.
I pondered that. Your speech is during the eclipse?
Of course. That is why we are all here,
he smiled. That's what I don't understand. The eclipse is why your dragons are running amok, killing citizens in search of some old book. As a native, I take offense to that. You never asked to enter my territory, and you have murdered several people rather than simply asking someone for what you seek. As an arcane book dealer, I could have helped you, but you never asked. You chose threats instead. Breaking into my bookstore not once, but twice, is a death wish. His eyes tightened, obviously surprised to hear about the second break-in. But if it hadn't been him, then who? I pressed on. Foolish for a leader of any kind. It's no wonder you couldn't keep Misha from my control. You were weak. His face grew tight.
Be careful. I can be a generous friend, or a terrible enemy.
I'll take my chances, I answered with a disdainful shrug. He prickled.
The book is a family heirloom, and does not belong in the hands of thieves.
The people who are dead were not thieves, obviously, or you would have your precious bedtime story by now, fucking idiot. I looked back at Gunner. Can you believe this guy? Dragon Lord? What a crock. Can't even get an old family book back. He growled then.
You would dare mock me.
His face was scarlet. There is a difference between fact and mockery. Stating the truth is not punishable. If it offends, it is because it is true, and you have no grounds for argument.
I will strip the flesh from your bones,
he began. I brought my arms down with a snap, and whips of power suddenly exploded from each wrist, one made of liquid fire, the other of liquid ice, each crystal as sharp as a razor. The whips extended 6 feet to either side of me, shattering a table and a clay vase. The rug caught fire at the edges, where the fiery whip rested, and a quick flick of my other wrist shattered a huge fish tank, instantly turning the water and everything inside it into a solid block of ice. My body reacted to the sudden release of power, pleased beyond measure.
Try me, Rago. I fucking dare you,
I hissed back, smiling through my teeth. Gunner was in a half-wolf form, perched on his toes, and Tori had one of the dragons pinned against the wall with her hand squeezing the delicate throat, the dragon's legs kicking feebly as she tried to escape. Tori squeezed tighter and the dragon slumped with a final exhale, unconscious, I hoped. Misha clapped her hands, giggling. My rage was passing through them, like extension cords of my power, overriding their own conscious thought process. Creepy, but probably life-saving in this case. The Dragon Lord blinked back, eyebrows furrowing.
I am not Rago, but I am very interested to hear how you discovered his name. My name is Alaric Slate. Why are you so fixated on Rago? Is he in St. Louis?
The man's eyes were anxious.
You can put away your weapons. I mean you no harm. This night, I stand by my word, as much as it displeases me not to kill you.
Sensing the truth, I drew back my power, motioning my friends to do the same. My whips of power snapped out of existence. My thoughts raced. If he wasn't Rago, then that meant there was a third player out there somewhere. Not good. Perhaps a third player had broken into my shop. The feeling is mutual, but know that I will see the murderers dead before you leave town.
Well, we won't be leaving any time soon, Master Temple, so I propose a truce.
I give you until this formal conversation is over. He pondered that for a minute, and then nodded.
Agreed. Bring me the book tomorrow, and I will let you see the thief.
I began to argue, but he held up a finger.
I carry bargaining power. The thief is not all that I have that might tempt you. I have obtained one of your friends, and their limited existence depends on your cooperation. I instantly thought of Indy. Who? I whispered, the whips of power immediately flaring out again. I was even surprised at my creation, because the more I thought about it, the more sure I was that I had never created such a weapon as them before. You shall see when you accompany me at my short speech tomorrow afternoon. What is so important about this book, or the eclipse for that matter? His smile grew distant, nostalgic. The book is similar to the Old Testament of the Christian Bible. It explains much of our direct lineage from that first dragon. It is said that somewhere in that story is hidden a ritual to awaken a true dragon lord, the Obsidian Sun, granting him the powers of our very distant first ancestor. He will receive incalculable powers and lead us into an era where we are respected and feared. We have pieced much together from that ritual, but I would like to verify as much as possible before I attempt it. The eclipse is like the solstices for the fairy, a day of balance and power, where one reclaims control over the other. Alas, we will not be taking power from anyone, but rather reclaiming the power and control that was lost to us over the years.
He turned back to me, smiling.
It is very dear to me.
So you think that you were powerful enough to be this leader? A nod. A leader is more than power. A leader has a sharp mind. Where you have the mind of a brute, if you can think of no other way to obtain this book than by shedding innocent blood. His eyes laughed at my childlike naivety.
We are monsters, Master Temple. We don't play by the traditional rules of your precious humans. They are all food for us, not worthy of existing, but for our appetites. Check the guest list for tomorrow. You will see numerous aliases from all walks of life, but I guarantee that I will have hundreds of dragons to answer my call from all over the world. If that isn't good leadership, I don't know what is. Now it is time for you and your friends to leave. Perhaps tomorrow I will discover how you have gained your mind control powers. I must admit that I hadn't anticipated this ability of yours. It makes things more complicated. But I could still have use for you when I take the city. Until tomorrow.
Then he bowed and turned his back on us. He pointed at two particularly dazzling women, snapped his fingers, and pointed at a distant bedroom. He began undressing as he walked.
I trust you can let yourself out like good dogs.
He mocked over his shoulder.
We did.
Fuming, I snatched up the music box, and we left. Next batter up, Asterion, the Minotaur.
Chapter 30. I stepped out of the car, feet crunching on the frosted grass.
You sure you don't want different backup? I would feel terrible if I helped kill the Minotaur,
Gunner added. I rolled my eyes. Some help he was. Misha and Tori sat in the back seat, looking anxious to join me. I didn't believe that I had permanently mind-fucked Misha, but she had switched sides at some point and was proud of it. You two mind waiting here for us? I asked the two women with a grin through the open rear window. They nodded, smiling coyly at each other. Maybe Tori would get her chance at that drink after all. I began walking away from the car, speaking to Gunner. I doubt I will need your help, but you must obey my commands if you come. This is between him and I. No participation unless I say so. Gunner looked relieved that he wouldn't have to get his paws dirty. Since when did minions become so useless? In all the stories I had read, they looked after their master's best interest, despite contrary orders. Maybe I was a croc leader also. I sighed, pushing the thought away. We left the car running. The falling sun sat heavy and cold in the sky. We walked for a few minutes, past the point where I had conversed with Asterion 2 days ago. I began to grow nervous, wondering if I was too late or at the wrong place. We finally stepped out of the proximity of the Land Rover xenon headlights and into darker pasture. The metaphor not lost on me. I felt a tingle of power, and we were suddenly in a different place entirely. Torches surrounded us in a wide circle, wicks crepitating loudly in the silence. Trees climbed high beyond the torches, allowing only a bit of the sunset to hit us. It felt old, ritualistic. In the center of the ring, limed by the firelight, sat a table. And before the table sat the Minotaur. Shadows wavered around the ring of firelight, swaying back and forth like dancers. I heard a snickering neigh from outside the light, but saw nothing except more shadows. There had been no visible sign that we were sharing the pasture with anyone while we had been walking through the empty field, yet here we were. I looked up and noticed that the sun had dropped significantly, resting just above the horizon, blazing with fire and warmth, like it was the height of summer. Then I realized that I was warm. No, hot. As if it really was summer. I blinked at that. The grass wasn't frosted, but budding with life. Asterion was watching us, amused. No wonder you convince all the heifers to do you. You have the coolest digs in the pasture. He smiled back, shaking his head.
None of my partners have seen this place. It wouldn't be appropriate. It is always warm and sunset at the dueling grounds, he said.
The dueling grounds. You mean that this place is set aside just for dueling? Where are we? He studied us for a moment, face pensive.
You are between worlds, wizard. Not part of your world completely, and not part of mine completely. It is a rift between the two, just like sunset, stuck between two stark realities, day and night, myth, and your world.
As if that were answer enough, he continued.
I see you have brought a friend. That is, I suppose, in agreement with the Accords, but still.
He's a huge fan of yours. In fact, I doubt he'll help me kill one of his mythological heroes if he has any say. Gunnar nodded simply, glad that I had made his stance clear. He still thought that a simple discussion could solve things. How terribly naive. I, on the other hand, was more certain of a different outcome for the night. One of us must die, or be severely injured, maimed, or incapacitated to win the duel.
Kill? I have informed you that I am now enlightened, or attempting to achieve such a state. Why talk of killing Master Temple?
Asterion snorted. That is the definition of a duel. And you did just say that this was according to the old traditions, not your new age protocol. Promises made, promises kept, were the words you used, if I am not mistaken. And I am never mistaken when it comes to my memory.
There are numerous ways to win a duel, Master Temple. Come, sit. We must converse like gentlemen.
I heard another neigh beyond the flames, and then the scream of a dying animal. Do we have company that I should know about? I asked. Gunnar looked uneasy as well.
Grim must have grown hungry,
Asterion said thoughtfully. He appraised me as I walked closer.
Your power has increased since last we met.
I shrugged. He touched the air around me, feeling the tendrils that I thought only I could see.
Yet you leak all around you. Why do you waste your power?
He asked with a frown. It's kind of new. And when I don't leak, I become kind of reckless. I answered honestly. This was not the kind of duel that I had expected, but the knight was still young, so I remained guarded. Asterion stroked his thin beard.
Your new power is seeking to fill you up, yet your cup, at the moment, is too small to hold it all in, so you spill over to those near you. You must deepen your cup,
he said, as if it made all the sense in the world. Thanks, Confucius, but I don't know what that means or how to do it. Asterion tilted his bull-like head.
You must learn soon. It is not finished growing.
I blinked.
In fact, I think it is only just beginning, but come, we shall discuss other things this night.
Armed with that assurance, I sat down across the table from him, most of my newfound power centered in my chest, eager to jump out into whatever form I would allow. But the rest flowed loosely about me. So, how does this work if we aren't going to bash each other's brains in? Asterion turned to Gunnar.
Does he always speak so boorishly, Wulfric?
Gunnar nodded with a proud smile at the title.
He either talks like this or like a man stepping out of a Dickens novel. No one really knows why he switches back and forth so much. Sometimes he acts like the perfect gentleman, but then others.
He waved a hand at me, as if in explanation. Asterion pondered me,
with another stroke of his beard. I ignored it, but was surprised at Gunner's perception. A game board sat in front of us, black and white stones, patiently waiting for our fingers to command.
Do you know the game? There are many different versions, but this one is quite unique. Of that I can assure you.
Asturian smiled darkly, rattling a leather dice cup in one meaty fist. We're going to play a board game, I asked in disbelief. He nodded.
The game of the gods. Vichu soy Dios ayi ein piptusi,
I muttered to myself, remembering a phrase from my father. Asturian arched a brow.
The dice of God are indeed always loaded. I'm surprised at your languages, Master Temple. You are truly your father's son.
He sounded sad. You were close with my father? I asked softly, not even mad at the mention of them. It was almost pleasing to be able to talk to someone who knew my parents for who they really were.
Occasionally. He would come to play now and again. Did he teach you the game?
I nodded.
Ah, then hopefully I will have a skilled opponent to battle this evening.
His face lit up at the prospect. I hadn't played it much, but my father had taught it to me, enjoying the complexity of the simple-looking board game. Even with only two colors of stones, the possibilities were endless. I had seen many remakes of the game, Reversi and Go, among others, but I had never seen one meet the difficulty of the original. They were like the children of this game, each merely a shade of the former glory of the original. I couldn't help but feel the same about myself. Would I ever step out of my father's shadow? Asturian spread his sausage-sized fingers imploringly.
We shall roll for first turn. Abandon your power for the duration of the game.
No, I immediately answered. We are dueling, and for that I need whatever magic I have to be at my beck and call. Asturian eyed me for a moment.
Then at least do not cheat. The game does not appreciate manipulations.
I furrowed my eyebrows at that, so Asturian explained.
The game is powerful and will punish any direct manipulation with force.
I withdrew my own dice cup, packed especially for this unlikely possibility, and plucked out the correct five dice. They were ivory, real ivory. Asturian scrutinized them, eyes widening.
Those are quite spectacular. Which animal lost his life for you to play such a game with them?
Mammoth, I answered honestly, or at least as honestly as I knew. They could, of course, have belonged to some other creature, but that was what I had been told when my father had given them to me.
They are not imbued with any devious magic, correct?
I shook my head, offering them to him for inspection. No, but yours are. His fingers hesitated as they reached out for my dice.
Pardon?
Your dice are loaded, weighted opposite the fives, if I judge correctly, but not enough to always roll a five. Honestly, I didn't know where the words came from, but I could feel the extra weight that would throw them off balance.
I would never do such a thing,
he said, glaring at me. You cannot fault something for acting in accordance to its nature. The nature of those particular dice is to cheat. Nothing in your new philosophy could possibly blame you for using them, unless you made them to cheat, or you are using them because you wish to cheat in order to win, I added, face devoid of accusation. He watched me for a moment, and then snorted, slamming a head-sized fist on the stone table. And I jumped up to my feet.
I do not feel the mood for a game anymore.
As you wish. Shall we have a dance-off, then? I threw down a quick dance move I had once seen a competitive breakdancer do to challenge his opponent. I thought it looked rather impressive, as I had practiced it quite a bit, but Gunner burst out laughing.
What was that? You looked as if you were having a fit.
Asturian frowned. It's a perfectly good challenge move, I argued. Gunner laughed harder.
Do not mock me, wizard. I am not pleased to discover that these dice are loaded. Your father gave them to me. I always wondered why we played such an even game, attributing it to our sharp minds, but now I realize it was because we used the same loaded dice.
Interesting. My father was a dirty cheat when necessary. Huh, who knew? We could play with my dice, I offered.
Like father, like son, yours are probably also loaded, he grumbled.
I squeezed my power tight, withdrawing all the tendrils to myself. Then I threw the dice on the table. 5, 3, 6. I scooped them up and did it again. 1, 4, 6. I did it several more times, proving no consistent tosses. Satisfied? After a moment, he nodded. Then we began to play. It was a game of both luck and skill. Luck with the numbers rolled, and skill with how the player chose to use those numbers to move his stones. It symbolized life. One must make the best out of the cards they are dealt. I played rakishly in the beginning, but noticed a quick difference in this version of the game. Whenever I lost a piece to Asterion, I felt a sharp prick in my finger. After a few poor plays, the pricks grew more intense, one even drawing blood. Asterion had thicker skin than me, but he had also known about the consequences to the game beforehand. Gunnar inched forward as he noticed one of my flinches, watching us with both concern and interest mingling together. After successfully goading Asterion into trusting me, I began to relax. He was leaning forward with excitement now as he watched the board, choosing where to place his stones. The board was heavily in his favor, as he had been playing more carefully, cautious of his new opponent. Little by little, I released the restraint I held on my power, so that with each throw I was less and less in control of my power leakage. Asterion could sense magic, but I wasn't directly doing anything with my magic, merely releasing my hold on it. That's when the tables began to turn. I was hopelessly behind, and it was his turn. He could have rolled almost anything and won, but he didn't. He sat staring at the dice on the table. 3 ones, also known as the Sisters of Fate to the Greeks. It wasn't even enough of a roll for him to actually take the turn. I scooped up the dice and tossed them disinterestedly, not thinking, not worrying. As they hit the table, I felt reality shift. It wasn't purposeful, and it was so discreet and natural that even Asterion didn't notice it. It was identical to when the thief had blundered into the copse by the river earlier, odds running wild. As a child, when I had hit my first new power plateau, strange things had happened. My parents had been baffled by it, saying they had never heard of such a thing happening. But over the next week or so, the things that happened around me became too random to ignore. A phone call from a girl who had never before shown interest in me. A cop suddenly deciding not to give me a ticket when I had been doubling the speed limit. A fellow student deciding to apologize to me for being so cruel when we had been children. And even a fire starting in a chemistry lab where I was supposed to give a report that I hadn't yet written. Then they had ceased, and life had returned to normal. And they had all happened after such a sensation as happened now. I rolled 3 sixes. Asterion grunted, and I moved my pieces, slashing a third of his pieces from the board. He actually grimaced at the physical pain of losing so many at once, probably drawing blood on one of his beefy fingers. My luck had taken over. He had already lost. He just didn't know it yet. He rolled again, and although it was a better roll, it wasn't anything that helped him. Within 3 moves, I sat staring at the board full of my pieces, only one of his stones left. He scowled up at me, and then flipped the board over in frustration at his loss. Gunnar hid his smile well. I didn't.
The first part of our duel is in your favor. We shall have a discussion next.
I nodded, rolling my shoulders for circulation, glad that he hadn't noticed the change in odds as anything unnatural. What bothered me most was that I knew he wanted to hand over the book, but he had to fulfill the necessary obligations that Hermes had bestowed upon him. Now, I knew that compared to all the other problems I was facing, finding a book for a client was not that important. But I had given my word that it would be done, and that is something I would not give lightly. But Asterion had also mentioned that the book had something to do with dragons, which I was neck deep in at the moment. So here I was, playing a board game and risking my life in order to figure out what the fuck exactly was going on in my city. Asterion's voice was harsh as he spoke next.
Explain these 3 weaknesses to me. Life, death, and love.
I blinked, waiting for more. I don't understand, I finally answered.
How so?
He asked, heavy eyebrows lifting slightly. I don't know how love could be a weakness, I gave as an example. Asterion leaned forward, folding his arms before him across the table to support his bulk. His gold nose ring glinted in the firelight. I heard the stamp of hooves outside the circle and shivered as I remembered the scream from earlier.
Answering one answers them all. You love to kill, yet love to promote life. You would end the lives of a few wicked to promote the lives of others, yet you relish in the act. You kill too easily, and no executioner can be allowed to roam the streets without a check to that power. And finally, like the hummingbird, you love to flit from one pretty flower, a woman, to the next, tasting each, but never filling yourself. With humans, this hurts the woman, even if they presently do not understand it. Eventually they will, but by then it will be too late for them.
I thought hard about his words, because they were true, but I still felt I was right. On some of it, the last is true, something I was beginning to realize just recently.
Oh?
He motioned for me to continue. Love is precious, and shouldn't be wasted on every passing whim, or it will mean nothing by the time you truly wish to share it with someone who matters, I said softly. Gunnar grunted in surprise. Asturian smiled.
And the rest?
I seem to link them all to justice. I do not relish the act of killing, but what it signifies.
But who are you to judge right from wrong? Is it because you have power?
Yes, I answered without thinking.
Socrates would roll over in his grave,
Asturian began. I understood where he was going. Okay, hold on. Not because I have the power, but because I have the ability. I do not judge who is naughty or nice. If someone harms an innocent, then they are wrong, especially if they do so to gain power. I am an executioner, but only on behalf of those who cannot protect themselves. I relish the act of delivering justice, but not in the act of delivering harm. There is a significant difference. Asturian weighed me contemplatively and then smiled.
Then it seems I owe you a token of my gratitude.
My shoulders relaxed. It was over. Does this mean I won? Can I tell people I defeated the Minotaur in a duel?
You beat me at a childish board game, but you passed a test.
He smiled eagerly.
Now we duel.
Chapter 31. Asturian stood.
Step away from the table, if you please. You may embrace your gift now.
I did, and he led me away from the table, but still within the circle of firelight. I whipped up a hasty bit of magic behind his back, but he was too excited about the duel to notice. He turned to face me, bowed with hands formally folded together, like a martial arts bout, and then he was rushing at me, head down. His horns gleamed in the flickering firelight. They pierced me below the stomach, and I screamed out in agony as I fell to the ground. But as soon as my form touched the grass, it disappeared. Asturian blinked, suddenly wary, as his eyes darted about, searching for my wounded body. From the comfort of the table, I spun my spell a second time, creating a second visual replication of myself to stand off to Asturian's right. He turned, nostrils flaring as he saw the image of me flicker, bloody hands clutching the wound. The Minotaur darted forward again, flicking his head at the last moment to send me up into the air, but then I disappeared again. I smiled from my front row seat atop the table, invisible to him and Gunner. I crossed my ankles as I wove three more visual replications of myself, placing them evenly apart before him. He leaned back, face angry, attempting to judge which version of me was real. One had no injury. One had only the stomach wound, and the other had both wounds. I made them flicker in and out of existence, but not the uninjured form, luring him. He charged, tearing up the grass in his rage. As his horns struck the resemblance, gossamer ropes as strong as Kevlar snapped around him, limiting his mobility. He roared in fury, lunging at the second replication of me. I smiled, pleased at my work, and also the raw fear on Gunner's face as he watched the Minotaur maim me. Asturian pierced the second form as it turned to run away in mock fear. This time, the gossamer ropes of power latched around his arms even tighter, pulling them back to his sides, while several others restricted his thighs. Asturian bellowed triumphantly as he struck the last form hard enough to kill me for real. I let the spectral image vanish on contact, and the last of my gossamer ropes wrapped firmly around his boots, snapping tight as he fell to the ground, completely immobilizing him.
I withdrew the cocoon of magic around me, clapping my hands as I stepped down from the table, now visible to all. Gunner and Asterion both stared back in disbelief, realizing that I had never left the table. My voice was soft. You questioned me on life and death, and you were so ready to kill me just now. I saw you mortally wound me 5 times. Bad Buddhist. Bad, bad Buddhist. I waggled a finger at him. I have not harmed you in the slightest, yet I have incapacitated you. How do you suppose this is, if I am so intent on killing everyone who crosses me? He smiled as he spoke 3 words.
Your turn, Grim.
The torches around us evaporated with a puff, and I heard the strange horse-like neigh again. Then the sound of galloping hooves raced towards me from the sunset shadows. I heard Gunner grunt as something slammed into him, knocking him completely across the clearing. But in the sudden lack of firelight, it was difficult for me to see clearly, even with the fading sunset, because the surrounding trees cast an army of shadows around us, and they still moved back and forth as if alive. A place between worlds, the Minotaur had said. What was out there? And what were the shadows? A dark blur moved before me, and I leapt back onto the table, just missing a single gnarled horn from stabbing my thigh. Silky black feathers brushed my arm, and I leapt backwards off the table. I heard a heavy flap of wings as a huge silhouette rose up before me, and then it disappeared again. It was toying with me. I called Stoneskin around me before I consciously thought about it, just like I had against the gargoyles. Panicked, but better protected, I swept the clearing with my eyes, trying to use my power to light up the clearing with fire so that I could see what the hell was attacking us. But my fire quickly flickered out, as if the darkness had simply swallowed it up. Before the light disappeared, I spotted Gunner lying on his back, staring up at the sky. But he was breathing. I hissed at the Minotaur, not looking at him as the world plunged back into darkness. This wasn't part of the duel.
We each brought a pet. Don't you like him? He's rather territorial, though I must admit.
I heard something behind me only a second before I felt the impact knock me forward enough to blow the air out of me in a rush. The sound of crunching stone armor filling the clearing. I landed on my chest and rolled. I remained kneeling, hoping to use the sunset to outline my assailant while hiding my own silhouette from view. I hoped it had been using my silhouette to find me, and not that it had some seriously kick-ass night vision. Then it suddenly appeared in front of me. A horse, the size of a Clydesdale, pawed at the earth with a silver front hoof, fire tracing away from the ground in a smoky burn, helping me see it clearly for the first time. Its eyes were like blazing orange embers, and it was mostly covered in feathers like a peacock, but black, with fiery red circles on the tips instead of the usual pretty turquoise. Similarly feathered, monstrous black and red-tipped wings flared out behind it, tripling its size, and more feathers flared out around its entire neck in a lion-like mane, quivering as it snorted at me. One massively thick barbed horn spiraled up from its forehead, looking more like a trio of horns braided together, with tiny spikes curling off the sides, like thorns on a rosebush. Then it surged forward. To say it was graceful was an understatement. It was so beautiful that I was frozen still in admiration as I watched the red-rimmed mane of feathers tug back against the force of its sudden movement. Its horn struck my chest, and my stone skin crunched before the aged bone. The pressure was immense, but just as suddenly, it stopped. I opened my very brave eyes, which had somehow closed as it hit me, and stared into a silky, smooth-haired face. The beast neighed at me, stomping an angry hoof, but didn't bolt. Stupidly, I reached out a hand to pet the magnificent creature. Asterion and Gunner both began to shout a warning, but stopped as my fingers brushed the snout. The feathers were just as smooth as they looked, but there was also regular velvety hair on its face. The eyes calmed as they watched me, and then it pulled its head away from my chest, as if apologizing, and snap closed the red-tipped mane surrounding its head. I blinked, letting the stone slide away from my skin and sheets. Asterion spoke.
It is finished. The book is yours.
He was somehow standing up, my restraining cords of power gone. I blinked at him, lost in the feel of the creature's fur beneath my fingers. That wasn't so bad.
Granted, I should have taken into account the myths involving unicorns.
Asterion muttered.
I should have remembered that they couldn't harm virgins.
I adamantly began to protest as Gunnar burst out laughing. I am no way a virgin. Of that I can assure you. Tell him, Gunnar. The Minotaur smiled, reaching out a hand to help the werewolf stand. Instead of backing up my claim, Gunnar accepted Asterion's assistance with an odd gaze as he stared upon the myth towering over him. For future reference, I mentally noted that Gunnar was useless in a duel. Asterion clasped a meaty arm around Gunnar's shoulders.
That is where myth deviates from truth. You see, it's not just a virgin that is immune to a unicorn's wrath. It is also the last of a bloodline. It is just a coincidence that all of the documented survivors happened to be either a virgin or both, the last of their line and a virgin. It seems Grimm likes you.
Grimm knelt before me like a servant to a king. I stepped back unsure. This isn't really what I imagined a unicorn would look like, I said. Asterion chuckled.
No, but you are imagining the adapted stories of Pegasus. This is his brother Grimm. Perseus never met him. Lucky for him, I should say.
Until that moment, I had thought the unicorn and Pegasus were two different beasts, but didn't want to flaunt my lack of knowledge. I had a reputation to uphold, after all. Asterion judged Grimm as he knelt with head bowed before me.
Grimm is obedient and takes care of himself. All one must do is call him when in need, and he will appear out of any nearby shadow to help.
Just as quickly, Grimm suddenly disappeared. A single feather drifted down to the ground in his place. I picked it up, admiring the blazing red orb at the tip, before carefully placing it in my pocket. What am I supposed to do with a horse? Asterion frowned.
You would be well advised not to demean his help. He is far more than a horse, as you just saw.
I nodded back, swallowing reflexively.
You beat me fairly, Master Temple, but why didn't you simply battle me directly?
Sure confidence in your superior ability to maim and murder, I assure you, I replied, grinning. I have friends that need my help, and I couldn't do that if I spent all my energy battling you directly. It was the path of the least consequences. The Minotaur smiled at the compliment.
One can't die at the dueling grounds. You would have recovered from any injury in a day or so. Any injury,
he added with a grin. I stared back in surprise. Truly? I asked, astounded.
Truly,
Asterion smiled. With knowledge like that, I wouldn't have been so fucking stressed out about tonight, but I let it go with a heavy breath.
Oosa.
I rubbed my earlobe meditatively. I would also like to add that your karmic conversation with me hit a point that I couldn't refute, so I tried the path that would be the least offensive. I incapacitated you, but didn't hurt you directly. Hopefully karma will remember that when it comes my way again. Asterion appraised me studiously.
How appropriate. You are, of course, correct. You would make an excellent student.
I shook my head. I would look terrible bald. Or fat. With both, I would look positively ridiculous. Gunnar rolled his eyes.
Here.
Asterion handed me a book that I hadn't seen him grab.
This is what you seek.
I accepted the aged leather tome from his hand without asking where he had grabbed it from, and tucked it away in my coat, noticing the picture I had drawn for him on the cover, and the faint smell of cold stone and snakes. Oddly familiar, but I couldn't place why. Thank you.
Perhaps I should thank you, Master Temple. It has been in my care for so long now, and one can only hope that a better guardian was needed. And that is why I lost today.
Gunnar was still staring from one of us to the other, a stupid grin on his face. We must be leaving now, Asterion. I have dragons to face.
Of that I am certain,
he answered cryptically. Again, I wondered what the book was about and what it had to do with dragons. He said it was an original, but an original what? He turned to Gunnar.
It is nice to make your acquaintance, Ulfric. Perhaps the next time will be under a less stressful occasion.
Gunnar smiled back.
It would be my pleasure.
Then everything was suddenly gone, and we were left standing in the middle of a field, staring at each other.
You do lead the most interesting life, Nate, Gunnar said,
glancing around in surprise. Tell me about it. Come on. We have a nightclub to visit, but I need to chat with Peter first. You can take Tori home to change and pick me up after. We'll figure out something to do with Misha on the way. We walked towards the car, the headlights blinding as I realized it was suddenly night. How long had we been gone? Chapter 32. I stumbled inside my shop, shouldering the door open warily. Some of the lights were on. Peter must already be here. I headed back into one of the projection rooms, following both the light and the sound of epic music and dying screams. Ah, what a peaceful sound. I nudged the door open to find Peter sitting before one of the screens, playing Gods of Chaos 4, leaning forward eagerly, as if it would help against the dozen enemies he was battling. Hey, I said, falling down onto the couch beside him. He started, but didn't take his eyes off the game.
Sorry, didn't hear you come in.
He gestured at the table to a full drink he had made. Another sat empty beside it.
Poured you one of your elixirs of life. Absinthe.
You will make a good wife someday, Peter.
Yeah. Give me a minute. Almost killed him.
He continued playing, and I set down my satchel by the end of the couch, Asterion's book resounding with a heavy thunk.
Yes. Eat it, Minotaur,
Peter crowed. I pondered the screen as I sipped my drink, warmth blossoming in my stomach and throat. He doesn't really look like that, you know. Peter finally turned to face me. His eyes were red-rimmed, and he looked tired or extremely hungover.
I didn't even think about that. Here I was playing a video game against the Minotaur, and you fought him in real life tonight. I feel like an idiot. How did it go?
I grunted, taking a deep gulp of my drink. I survived, as you can see. I got what I wanted, and we parted on good terms. He was just fulfilling a promise he had made long ago. I leaned back, sighing. Works for me, I suppose.
Was it tough? I mean, he's tough in the game, and in real life you said that Theseus was the only one to ever defeat him.
I didn't fight him directly. I played his philosophy against him. Gunner saw it all.
You took Gunner? Why not me? I would have loved to see him, a real Minotaur.
The real Minotaur. And yes, I took Gunner because I wanted backup. I let the silence build between us until I saw Peter squirm a bit. Backup, I could trust. He looked at me then, cautious.
You don't trust me?
I laughed. I couldn't help it.
Trust? You?
I spat. I used to trust you. About 2 days ago. Then you just happened to whip out some magic like you had been doing it your whole life. And you never told me about it beforehand. How or why would I possibly trust you after that? He leaned back, resigned.
I was going to tell you, I swear. It just never came up. I wanted to be like you two for so long, and then I suddenly was. I didn't want to be your weak-ass apprentice. I wanted to appear formidable, strong, dependable.
Well, instead you disappeared untrustworthy. Satisfied? I grouched. He shook his head angry. How did it happen? When did it happen? I would have known if you had an innate spark in you all these years. I sensed nothing of the sort, though. What changed? He stood.
I need another drink first.
He tried to step over my bag, but his foot got caught up in the strap and he stumbled before catching himself, spewing the book from the Minotaur onto the floor. Peter stared at it for a second, and then stooped down to pick it up. Don't, Peter. He looked over at me, chastising eyes demeaning my warning.
It's just a book.
Then, it was in his fingers. I scratched my fingers through my hair, no harm in glancing at it, I guess. Besides, I hadn't had a chance to peruse it either, and I had risked my life for it. I watched Peter's face grow pale. He tried to speak, twice, but no sound came out. When he cleared his throat, it was barely a whisper.
How did you find it?
I squinted, taking another sip of my drink. I already told you. I got it from the Minotaur. It's for a client. He was shaking his head.
Is this some kind of joke? This is the book I wanted you to get for me. The one my client really wanted. How did you know?
He looked hungry and lost at the same time. My forearms pebbled with sudden anxiety. All right, Peter.
I don't know what you were talking about, but that book belongs to someone else. You look as if you have had enough to drink. I slowly stood, not wanting to spook him. He was ignoring me, reading the cover page. I leaned over enough to see and read it myself. I somehow managed to keep my face neutral. Sons of the Dying Sun was written across an entire page. My skin pebbled even further. The book Raven had asked for. The one Alaric wanted.
I thought that once the Dragon Lady asked for it, you wouldn't get it for me, thinking I was in league with her.
He laughed nervously.
I ran upstairs to take away the note, but I guess that Jesse had written down the wrong title anyway. So I left it. Idiot kid.
Who did you say your client was? I asked, my mind suddenly racing.
A rich old man who let me take over his portfolio. He said this was invaluable to him and that I would be rewarded handsomely.
He began idly fingering his bracelet with his thumb as he snapped the book closed.
I don't know how to thank you, Nate. I need to tell him right away. He will be thrilled. How much is it worth to you?
He paused for a second.
Wait, did you say you got this from the Minotaur? Why would he have it?
If my kid client had also asked Peter for the book, I'm sure he would have told me. But the brief description didn't sound like the creepy, secretive kid who had come to me a week ago. And the kid hadn't told me what the title was. He hadn't, for instance, told me that it was the same book a harem of dragons had been searching for, killing for. Alaric had said that there were many other dragons in town. Was there some kind of power play going on? If so, which side was I on? The kid didn't seem like he was working for anyone. If anything, he seemed to want everything on the hush. I used the moment of confusion to strike, sensing the wildness in his eyes and knowing something big was going on, even if I didn't have all the pieces. I snatched the book from his hands and darted back a step. I already told you, Peter. This book is bought and paid for by a client of mine. I worked for myself first, others second, if at all. Your client has no right to this book.
My client will triple what yours paid, he added, smiling.
I don't change my mind after I promise something. My client asked me for the book, I obtained it, and he paid for it. The last was a lie, but I'd be damned if I was going to pass over such a high-demand book to a stranger when I had almost been killed several times to find it.
Just hand it over, Nate. You will have your money tomorrow, enough to drown in absence for the rest of your life,
Peter added, with a slimy smile. I studied him for a moment and realized something for the first time. Perhaps you hadn't heard. I took over my parents' company yesterday. The money you offer for this book is a mere pittance to me. Quite literally. Money is no longer a motivator. Just my word. I clinked the ice cubes in my glass, swirling the jade liquid, as I watched Peter's eyes widen in surprise. I take on clients that I trust, and I haven't met yours. I do know that a harem of dragons want this book mighty fiercely, enough to kill me for it. Perhaps I will keep it for myself. After all, I did risk my life for it no less than an hour ago. The Minotaur was no easy meat. Peter watched me.
Why would the Minotaur have it?
I held up a finger. He didn't have it. He obtained it for me. I lied, not wanting to drag the Minotaur into it. There was a loyalty factor between my clients and I. I wouldn't sell him out just to get myself out of some hot water. Well, scalding water.
Come on, Nate. Just give it to me. We're friends.
I laughed. Funny, because I thought friends were honest with each other, and I distinctly remember telling you that you would get nothing from me until you explained your newfound powers. I promise you nothing in exchange, but you do owe me an explanation. So, start explaining. He fiddled his bracelet. Then I understood. Your bracelet gives you the power. He nodded.
It's a gift on loan for now. If I can obtain the book for him, the power is mine. If I can't get it, then I get a whole lot of pain. I thought, with you as a friend, I could find any book in the world, so I agreed. How hard could it be if my client was willing to pay anything for the book, and then I could be a wizard like you?
Deals with the devil are usually like that. His eyes darted to the book.
I don't want to be hurt by this guy, Nate. He's really strong.
He looked lost. Then let me help you. He shook his head, vehemently.
No, I can't. He'll kill me.
Who is he? I can make him back off. I have a reputation for this kind of thing.
Peter's eyes squinted.
I don't need your protection. Just give me the book. Now.
My anger was an immediate response to his tone.
Not happening, Peter. I think it's time for you to go beg forgiveness to your client. You should never make a promise that you have no way of keeping. It's time for you to accept the consequences, like a man.
My voice was low, furious that he would dare threaten me so that he could keep a power that wasn't his. Something deep inside his eyes snapped. Madness danced there, where nothing of the sort had ever belonged before.
The power had taken control of him.
Oh, I won't be begging anyone for forgiveness, Nate. You really should have heeded my advice and taken the offer.
He slammed his will against mine, sheer force against my hastily thrown shield. He was so strong. It was like a high school lineman trying to stop an NFL line, but I somehow managed to hold him back and trip him up with a slash of fire at his ankles. As he lost his balance, his power lessened enough for me to regain my thoughts.
Jesus, what the fuck was that bracelet? And where could I get one without the strings of servitude attached? I won't lie that it was an enticing offer from Peter's client. That was appealing even to me, and I had a considerable amount of power on my own. If he only had the finesse to match the power, he would be nearly invincible.
He regained his feet, lashing out with a rope of air to snatch the book. I tossed it behind me, cloaking it in shadows so that he couldn't see it anymore. He roared in anger.
I will have the book, Nate. Get out of my way.
Peter, listen to yourself. You are willing to attack your best friend for a taste of power. What the fuck is wrong with you?
He didn't listen, but instead began tossing balls of fire at me in rapid succession. I swallowed them all, with airtight pockets cast just before each, hoping to diminish the damage to my store as much as possible. Then my own power began calling out to me, that additional reservoir, and I used it. I cut directly through his attack and slammed him into the wall, his head rebounding sharply.
He lashed out one last time, slicing a 6-inch gash up my ribs with razor-sharp air until I managed to shield him away from his power completely. I tied the knot around his core, allowing him to feel the power of the bracelet, but not tap into it. He slumped, arms hanging uselessly and eyes rolling slightly. I was panting heavily. I didn't want him to keep the bracelet, but I was too scared to touch it, so I chose a different tact.
The book is not yours. When you wake up, you will be home, and we'll have some time to think about all this. I doubt I will ever trust you again, but I expect an apology. If you survive your encounter with your client, I no longer care what becomes of you, Peter. I don't tolerate betrayal. Then I slammed my power deep into his brain, shutting it down into a deep unconsciousness that would last until morning, a hibernated sleep of sorts. I prodded him with a finger to see if it had worked, and smiled grimly at my success. Wizards weren't supposed to use dark magic like this, altering the brain directly, but who would ever find out? Then I used flows of air to carry him outside my shop and hailed a nearby taxi.
My friend has had too much to drink. If it wouldn't inconvenience you, I would ask that you take him home.
The driver nodded. I waved a $100 bill at him. I have an eidetic memory. I glanced at his name placard on the dash. Ivan Petronov.
You will carry him to his room, lay him down on the couch, and lock up behind you. Leave his keys with the doorman, and you will have nothing to fear.
I paused dramatically, and then hissed out the next words with a sound like a knife leaving a sheath.
If anything of his somehow disappears from his apartment, or if I hear that in any way you have deviated from my instructions, I will hunt you down, take away your license, and make sure that the only thing you can eat from this day forward is borscht, because you will have no teeth. Agreed?
The man's face went from angry to pale, but he nodded. I handed him 2 more hundreds.
Pleasure doing business with you.
It was only as I stepped back inside that I realized I had been speaking in Russian. It was a perfect language for threats, full of harsh, angry syllables. Othello was rubbing off on me. I went back inside to ponder the book that had caused such a ruckus, waiting for Gunnar to pick me up so I could get the damn thing off my hands. Even though it was obviously dangerous, something about my client made me trust he wouldn't use it for harm. He was more concerned with keeping the book safe than anything else. He had even been making sure that no one else was asking for it. But of course, without the title, that had been impossible to relay to him. I hoped my instincts were right, and that I wasn't passing the book off to a psychopath.
Oh, well, we would see tonight.
At Artemis Garter. Chapter 33. I had told Misha to spy on Alaric while I dealt with my client. Hopefully she found something useful on her hunt. We pulled up to Artemis's garter around 10, and I cursed when I saw the lion sneaking around the front of the building, and then on and on into eternity. Heads turned as we cruised by, girls primping themselves or proudly revealing their cleavage to our pimped-out SUV. As we cruised by, I made eye contact with one of the valets, and he froze for a second. Then he jumped into the street, urgently flagging us down. Gunner stopped, looking confused. The valet ran up to our window and waited. Gunner frowned at me when I shrugged, but rolled down his window. The valet was heavily muscled, wearing a fishnet tee despite the cold, but he somehow pulled it off. His name tag said Clyde. His short, spiky hair looked like a weapon, and I wondered if he doubled as such. If security tossed him into the crowd, his hair would no doubt maim several people. He smiled.
"Good to see you, Master Temple. If you would please park over there, I will escort you and your party inside."
I looked where he had pointed. "That says reserved parking." Clyde smiled again, amused.
"Yes, reserved for distinguished guests and VIPs. Join me at the front when you are ready."
He stepped away, satisfied, and I felt Tori and Gunner's eyes on me.
"Have you been here a few times or something?"
I shook my head. "Never," I answered honestly.
Gunner looked doubtful, but parked the beast of a vehicle into the designated spot, and we all got out. Gunner wore a crisp white dress shirt, a heavy silver medallion hanging in a nest of blonde chest hair, and dark expensive jeans. His boots were mid-calf under the hem of his jeans, but they also looked expensive. I should know. I had bought it all. Tori was wearing a single-piece white cashmere sweater that dipped low, wide open almost to mid-stomach, allowing her breast to hang free without a bra and revealing quite a nice expanse of cleavage. Her long brown hair flipped down over her shoulders, the tips curling up just underneath her breasts. A wide leather belt helped her appear taller, and the fabric continued down into a mid-thigh skirt, which, when she was facing the other way, hugged her rear like a glove. She wore black knee-high boots, laced up in the back with red ribbon lacing, like a Christmas present. Oh, how anyone would love to unwrap that gift. Several of the women in line snorted in jealousy as they spotted her with us. I wore a starched black dress shirt with white cuffs and white jeans. My black boots were even more expensive than Gunner's. All in all, we did look like VIPs. We skirted the line and found Clyde waiting for us, an eager smile on his face, as he handed each of us a small paper bag with silver ribbon around the top. "Won't the rest of your guests be upset that we cut in line?" I asked. Clyde shook his head.
"VIPs do whatever they wish. They'll just want to get inside even sooner now that Master Temple is in the same club. It will be the talk of the town," he said with a grin.
"Right. How did you know we were going to be here tonight?" I asked, fiddling with the bag to see what was inside.
"I didn't. I just recognized you in the car. Almost every club in town awaits your arrival, Master Temple. Most of us have codes to follow that if you arrive, you are to be instantly treated as a VIP. Free marketing."
He motioned us inside the first door to a bouncer. The beefy man's eyes widened upon seeing me and then quickly shuffled us through. Clyde continued.
"Our patron sponsor for this evening requests that everyone don contacts for the night's festivities, and since drinks are covered at his expense tonight, we expect all guests to follow such a simple request, even VIPs."
He smiled.
"Now, if you will please put on your contacts."
Gunner piped up.
"I do not wear contacts. I have perfect vision."
He was frowning as he held up a disposable contact case from inside the pretty paper bag.
"Already accounted for, Agent Randolph. None of the contacts are prescription strength. They're merely part of the event."
We must have looked startled at his knowledge of Gunner's name, because he smiled wider.
"As I said, we follow news of you and any of your known acquaintances."
He frowned at Tori.
"But she is not familiar to me."
He smiled very politely as he reached out a hand.
"Miss..."
"Officer Tori Marlin," she answered after a look at my direction. "And yes, that works perfectly fine, but I do not understand why we should waste time putting on non-prescription contacts," she argued. Her last comment rolled off his shoulders.
"Pleasure to meet you, Miss Marlin. Now, If you will please follow me, I will show you the reason for the contacts.
His eyes sparkled with anticipation. He let us